Okay, we continue in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Zayin. Chapter 30, verse 7. We're up to the part of the story where David and his men had gone to the battlefield with the Plishtim, and in the interim, as they were being refused entry to be part of the Plishti army, by the time they return, they find out that Amalek has destroyed their home base of Tziklag and has taken the women, children, and everything captive. So when they return, this is a very sad thing, and David has to contend again with challenging times, as all his band of merry men even want to kill him. And that's where we're up to at this point. And then, of course, what kept David in the game, the end of Pasuk Vav said that David strengthened himself in Hashem, his God. So he strengthened his amun in Hashem, and that really is a very critical point, because that keeps your sense of balance and you're able to make intelligent decisions. So this is how he begins trying to get back the family and all the people that are captive. So Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer David el Avyasar HaKohen ben Achimelech. David speaks to Avyasar, who's the Kohen, the son of Achimelech. Remember, that's the same Avyasar who's the one escapee from the city of Nov, who Shaul killed out. And he has with him the Urim V'Tumim. He has the breastplate to ask questions from. So he says, so he asks the following question of Hashem through Avyasar. He says, first of all, he says, Hagisha na liha ephod, please bring the ephod, because that's the breastplate. You want to ask questions. Vayagesh Avyasar sa ephod al David. And Avyasar brings the ephod to David. It's a bit of an unusual pasuk. It's not like we didn't know that Avyasar is with him. And this was something that it seems to be almost an extra pasuk. To say, he asked Avyasar the following question. I don't know why, I don't have an answer to this, why the Pasuk has to tell us that David spoke to Avyasar the Kohen, and he says, bring me the ephod, and he brings him the ephod. I don't know, it seems to be a bit extra. I'm not sure what it's trying to teach us. Pasuk has, Vayishal David b'Hashem lemor. So now David asks from Hashem the following. Now there's a machlokas, the Malbim, and the way Chazal learned this Pasuk. So you have to look at it and figure how many questions is David asking at this point in time. So you have the first clause that says Erdof acharei hagdud hazeh, and then the next clause that says Ha'asigenu. So literally Erdof acharei hagdud hazeh means I will chase after that army. And then the next word Ha'asigenu clearly means will I catch up to them? Will I reach them? Clearly that second clause is a question. The debate of the commentators is the first clause a question? So the way the Malbim learns it, the Malbim is truer to the simple, direct meaning of the pshat. The word erdof means, I will chase. So the Malbim learns, he says to Hashem, I am chasing after these guys. That's not a question. The only question is the one word, Ha'asigenu, will I reach them? So according to the Malbim, it's only one question. And to that, what does Hashem say? Vayomer lo, Hashem says, Ridov, run after them. Ki haseg tasig, because you will surely catch them. Vehatzel tatzil, and you will surely save the people that have been captured. So, the Malbim says, what's Hashem answering? So Hashem is saying that, yes, you're asking, are you gonna catch them? The answer is yes, you will catch them. So your efforts are not in vain. Somebody's trying to catch them, you can't find them. You won't reach them, whatever. Will I reach them in time? Could also be part of the question, but maybe by the time you reach them, it's too late. He says, no, you will reach them. And then God, according to the Malbim, throws in for extra measure, and not only that, but you will save them. And therefore, it's not like, you're doing something that you want to do personally, but rather, no, that you're obliged to do this because you have the ability to save them. That's the way the Malbim learns The only problem with the Malbim is like, why did Hashem throw in that extra clause? You will surely save them if David's planning on going anyway. You know, usually God just answers your questions. If the question only is, will I reach them? Hashem should say, you will reach them. Hashem threw in for good measure, and you will save them. And Malbim says that's to encourage him and to really obligate him that, you know, if you just want to go on your own, if I reach him, I don't reach him, you know, okay. But now it's almost a directive from Hashem. It says, you will get them, and therefore make it your business to get the job done. It's a little bit problematic why Hashem would give an extra clause to encourage him in terms of being asked. Therefore, the other, the Medrash, on the other hand, which is, you know, interesting how the Malbim just challenges the Medrash, doesn't want to agree with the Medrash. You recall, we had a similar type of Medrash a little while ago. It's Gemara, it's not the Medrash, it's Gemara Yuma. It's Gemara Yuma, Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, that the Sefer Musar Nevi'im brings down. And he says like this, Gemara says, if you recall, the Gemara says you're not allowed to ask from the Kohen Gadol, from the Urim V'Tumim, two questions. And if you do ask two questions, you're only going to get answered on one. And if you recall, that was the question when Shaul was going to, when David was in the city of Keilah, after he saved the city of Keilah, and Shaul found out about it, he was going to try to catch David in Keilah, and David asked the Urim V'Tumim two questions. He says, "Has Sigroni Bale Keilah?" Number one, would the people of Keilah give me over to Shaul? And then he asks also, "Hayeved Shaul, is Shaul gonna go try to get me?" So, Yomer Hashem, he will go down. He only answered one of the two questions. You don't ask two questions from Hashem. You only ask one at a time. That was the rule. To which the Gemara then modifies the rule and says, but if you gotta ask two questions, it's very important to ask two questions, then Hashem answers you on both questions. And what's the proof to that? That's this very pasuk we just learned. The very pasuk where clearly Gemara must learn its two questions, he says, and it's interesting, Gemara adds one letter to the pasuk. It says, Vayishal David, David asks, lay more, from one letter. He says, Ha Erdof, shall I chase after? The pasuk doesn't say that. The pasuk says Erdof. It's a big different question, you know, as to what the actual text was. And we see, you know, it's a minor thing. But clearly, it's a difference. That letter, hey, you see what one hey means, a difference. Now, it's significant that he's asking two questions instead of one. It doesn't change the overall context. And that's, again, whenever you have these differences of opinion, what the text says, it's not like a major theme of, you know, thou shalt not kill versus thou shalt yes kill. It's only one word difference as well. We don't have those. But here, so that's the Gemara adds that word letter to say that's question number one. And so question number two is, that's again, will I reach them? To which Hashem answers, Ridof, you know, you should run after them, ki haseik tasig, for you will surely reach them, vahatzel tatzil, and you will save the people. So, therefore, the Gemara is learning Ridof is an answer to a question, and so Gemara learns it's two questions, two answers, and it's an exception to the rule. And the Musar Hanavim explains why you're allowed to make the exception rule, because if it's very pressing, you don't have time to wait. It took a bit of time. When you ask the question, till the coin asks the question, till the coin reads the letters from the breastplate, till he comes back, each goes, you know, like when you use an interpreter, right? It takes time. So here's in a rush. Before, when Shaul was coming, David had time to escape. Here, the people already were captured. Every minute is precious. You can't wait to ask twice and delay what has to happen. And therefore, the Gemara learns that you're allowed to ask two questions under pressing situations. What the Malbim does with this whole Gemara, he seems to go different than this Gemara. He seems to learn it's only one question, and to fit into the rule that you can never ask two questions. Why the Malbim disagrees with the Gemara, again, maybe it was all based on a different text that they had. If you had that extra hay in Ha Erdof or not, would make a difference if you'd learn it that way. Be that as it may, okay, it's enough a grammar lesson for today. But so we move to Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Tes and Yud, which is going to give us another machlokes between the Malbim and other commentaries. So Pasuk Tes. So now that David is told that he will reach them and he will be successful, Vayelech David, David goes, who? He goes, v'sheish me'os ish asher ito. And 600 men that were with him. V'yavu ad nachal ha-besor. He reached a place called the Valley of Besor. V'hanosorim amadu. And the remaining people stayed. So there's again an argument. What does it mean that the remaining people stayed? And now let's start with the Mitzudas and the Ralbag, who give, I would imagine, a simpler interpretation. So the Mitzudas of it says, who is the ones that are remaining that stay? It's focusing on the next Pasuk. So let's just jump to the next Pasuk for a minute. Pasuk Yud says, so it says that he got to Nachal Besor. Then it says, Vayirdov David, David runs, who he runs, Varbameos Ish, and 400 men. Vayamdu Masayim Ish, and 200 men stayed behind, Asher Pigru Me'avor Es Nachal Besor, who were too tired to pass the Valley of Besor. So the Mitzudas says, take the two Pesukim together. Yud is an elaboration of Pasuk Tes. Tess says David went with 600 men and he got to Nachal Besor and the people remained. And now the Pasuk is explaining that David ran now when he's at Nachal Besor. Now he's only running with 400. And who are the ones that remained in Pasuk Tess? Those are the 200, of the 600 that remained, and they got tired out. They were running and running and running. Got to the point, you know, you have to have a lot of strength, and, only in 200 did not have enough strength. They left behind. So the Mitzudas is saying the Pasuk is a little bit repetitive in explaining Pasuk Tes, and they were tired out. And they stayed, and the significant point is, and they did not return to their place. They stayed there. And we'll see in a minute why. The Ralbag learns the same shot. However, he debates as to why the second group, the 200, did not go. He first says that the remainder didn't agree to go any further and stayed there. And that's the 200 that they didn't have strength. Could be because they didn't have strength, they didn't agree, whatever. Maybe they were frightened. Not sure. He gives a few explanations. But that's the way the Mitzudas and the Ralbag learned, that it's that the extras are the same people of the original 600 that went with David, part of his 600 merry men. The Malbim learns differently, and I imagine he learns differently because he says, again, he's more literal to the pshat. Pasuk Tes already says there was a leftover, and Pasuk Yud implies there's a second, different group of leftovers. So where is he going to come up with any interpretation? So he looks into the book of Divrei Hayomim Aleph, and the book of Chronicles in chapter 12 discusses how there were a number of people who were from the tribe of Binyamin and from Menashe who joined the 600 people of David sometime before this event. I guess David had his main 600 fellows. And then there was another group of people who had joined him later on. And therefore, when he went to the Plishtim, and now he comes back, so it's the 600 plus these extra people. Okay, and therefore, when David comes back to Tziklag, again, it was David with his 600 men, and their family was all in Tziklag. It seems there were these other fellows, strong fellows from Binyamin and Menashe, who had joined David's group, but didn't bring their whole family, didn't really have permanent residency in Tziklag, and they, for whatever reasons, joined David. So now when all of them went to the Plishtim, when they all came back to Tziklag, all of them saw what happened. So the 600 who had lost their wives and children, they would continue to chase. The other fellows who had joined them previously from Binyamin Menashe, they didn't really have anything to lose. So they stayed in Tziklag. And that's the remainder in Pasuk Tes. Now in Pasuk Yud, of the 600 who go, now there's the other 200 who remained and did not go. So again, that fits nicer that we don't have to make repetition of Yud having to expand on Tes, but rather it's a different group of people. All right. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayimtzu ish mitzri basara. So on the way, on the field, as they're chasing, they find an Egyptian man. Vayikho oso el David, and they bring him to David. Vayitnu lo lechem, they give him some bread. Vayochel and he eats. Vayashkuhu moyim, they give him a little bit of water to drink. And we'll see in a minute. The Gemara says, obviously the guy was starving. And let's just read out the Pasuk Yud Beis a little more. And after they gave him a little bread and a little water, they gave him a piece of a dried fig cake, ushnei tzu mukim, and two big clusters of grapes. Vayochel and he ate, vatoshav ruchal alav, and his spirit came back to him. Why? What was the problem? Kilo achal lechem, because he hadn't eaten bread, velo shasamayim, and hadn't drunk water, shlosha yamim shlosha lelos, for 3 days and three nights. The guy was starving. So they gave him what to eat. So the Gemara says on this, the Musar Nevi'im brings this down. It's a Gemara in Yuma, again, a Gemara in Yuma, a little bit further along, Pei Gimel on the base, says, somebody who is in a state of starvation, what do? You give him a little bit of honey, give him a little bit of sweet stuff, because all these things bring back the spirit to the person. And they bring a pasuk that hints to this idea. And then Abaye says, no, we only do that after he's eaten a little bit. But before he eats, it would make him even more hungry. If a guy's starving, don't give him sweets. How do we know this? It's from this pasuk over here. Look what happened. They found an Egyptian man in the field. They brought him to David. What did they give him first? They gave him bread and water. After he has the bread and water, then they gave him the fig cake. They gave him the grapes. That's sweet food for that. So that's interesting. So the Musar Nevi'im says there's a lesson to be learned from this. You could argue on his point, but we'll say the point. He says, this shows you how far the philanthropic heart of the Jewish people are. That even though David and his men are in a big rush to take care of their family, but when they meet a person who is almost dead, they do what they can to revive him. And because of this, says the Musar Nevi'im, they merited to succeed and to save their entire family. Because the mitzvah of gemilas chesed, of an act of loving kindness, we know the Brisa says that's a mitzvah that a person enjoys the benefits of it in this world, and the merit, original merit, stays for the world to come. Chesed is a tremendous thing. So as busy as David was to save his family, they engaged in the act of chesed in order to help this person. Hashem rewarded them with that. So, I mean, that's a big lesson. A lot of times people say, I got very important things to do. And then Hashem throws a random chesed in your way, but while you're busy with other things. And so I haven't got time for it. I got other things I got to do. So you got to sometimes realize, no, Hashem, you know, you're busy with something. You want to succeed in that thing. Who says you're going to succeed? So Hashem says, well, you know, I want you to succeed. So guess what I'm going to do? You're going to think I'm inconveniencing you. You got a million things that you got to accomplish. And then Hashem just throws a random chesed your way. That's going to delay you from getting everything else. And you think that's a delay. The answer is no, that Hashem gave you that random act of chesed to be the merit to succeed in the very thing that you're trying to accomplish, that you may not have had the merit to succeed in that beforehand.
So that's good, except you could look at it either way. They knew they were going to succeed because they already asked to win the Torah.
So
this could say, well, we're going to win anyway, so let's do this mitzvah anyway because we're going to win. Or, and not because, so in other words, I'm saying they didn't succeed because they did the mitzvah. They knew they're going to succeed.
Well, here's the thing. Sometimes Hashem tests you.
But in this case, they knew that they had already asked.
Yeah, so even when you ask. But, you know, David says, I'm running anyway. He says, yeah, so if Hashem told me to do it, so a guy will say, well, Hashem told me to do it, I better run and get it done. You know, even when Hashem promises, there's a yetzer to say, okay, he promised, but you better, you know, better make sure you take care of it. Right? So the yetzer would say, let the guy die. What do you care? You know, Hashem told you to go already, just go. Forget about this guy. Yeah, Hashem said, you'll win. But that's if I'm not negligent. And maybe taking care of this guy would be negligent. So that's how he learns, which is a nice muster, because the truth is you find this all the time. You're always, you know, you have to get something done, which is really important for you. And then Hashem just drops this time consuming mitzvah in your lap, and you kind of want to say, I don't got time for this. And Hashem's saying, you better make time for this, because this is, even though I told you you're going to succeed, it's based on the fact you do this chesed, because I know you're going to do that chesed. So, now, you could argue on his whole theory here. What would be the argument? How did they know where these guys were? So, you know how you know? If there happens to be this Egyptian who's dying, maybe there's a good chance he has something to do with these guys. And that's going to be the very next pasuk, where they're going to start asking him questions, interrogating him, and you're going to see it's this very guy who will lead them to these people. So, you know, so on the one hand you can say, oh, that just proves what the commentary of the Moshe Levim said. See, you go and do this chesed, and that's the merit, because it was that guy who went and helped you find them. You know, there's all kinds of stories like that. You know, the famous story of the person whose wife passed away and he was left a widower with a number of small children. And every week there was a person, while his wife was alive, there was a mishulch who always came to the door. I think it was every Thursday night. Would always ask for some money. The wife would always give him some food or whatever. And so the husband now is frantically trying to get ready for Shabbos on Thursday night. He doesn't have his wife. He's only got the kids. Kids are running around looking for sugar, this and that. He says, knock at the, ring at the bell. He says, mishulach. And the guy said, now, what do I need a mishulach for? I'm so busy, you know, why bother? And the mishulach says, do you got something to give me to eat, whatever? He says, what do you mean give you? Well, your wife always gave me something to eat Thursday. He says, what? So in his mind, he's thinking, I don't got time for this guy. Just send him away. Feels bad. His wife always did it. Okay. Looks in the fridge. Can't find anything. Says, let me see if there's something in the freezer. Opens the freezer. One of his kids was locked in the freezer by playing hide and seek. So he saved his kid's life. So you're trying to get things done and take care of your kids. Comes along a guy and is disturbing you because he wants a little chesed. You go do a chesed and you don't realize that that's the very chesed is what saved your kid's life. True story. So I'm saying, Hashem a lot of times will throw these chesed's in your lap at the, generally Hashem does these at the worst times in terms of your time that you feel is the worst time. Hashem's saying it's the best time because you know what? Your kid was supposed to die. You don't really have enough merits. So I threw this guy in to give you a merit. So do it. So yeah, this happens quite often and this could be learned from David. On the other hand, you know, devil's advocate would suggest maybe not. As now we'll look in the next pasuk, and we'll see why we could see it the other way. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer lo David. So David says to him, L'mi ata ve'ei mize ata. So David asks him two questions. Question number one is, who owns you? Because he was an Egyptian. No such thing as a free Egyptian in the land of Canaan. You know, no thing as an Egyptian landowner in the land of Canaan who happened to get lost and is starving. Obviously, he knew he was a servant, so he says, who do you belong to, A? And B, where are you from? What's your origins? So what is the answer? Vayomar, he says, Na'ar Mitzri Anochi, I'm a young Egyptian lad. Eved Le'ish Amaleki, I'm a servant to an Amaleki person. And what happened was, Vayazveni Adoni, my master left me here to die. Why? Ki chalisi, because I became sick. Hayom Shosh is the third day I'm sick. In other words, he must have been a servant for these Amalekis. And now let's continue with the story. Yudalid, he says, Anachnu Peshatu Negev, we spread out and marauded the southern region of Eretz Canaan, which included areas of Hakresi, it's an area of Kresi, Valasher Yehuda, and areas by Yehuda, Valanegev, Kolev, and the south area of a city called Kolev, Vestziglag, and the city of Tziglag, Sarafnu Eish, we burnt in fire. So I'm not going to get into the details exactly, but it seems that there was the southern border of Yehuda and the border of the Plishtim were contiguous to each other. And these marauders went and looted and pillaged that southern area of Yehuda and the adjoining Plishti area, which included the city of Tziglag, and that was where David's people were. Bang. So now David, it's a good thing he helped this guy. This guy knows, you know, this group. So now David asks in Pasuk Tesvav, Vayomer Elov David, Hasorideni El Hagdud Hazeh, can you take me down to this troop? Can you lead me to this troop and show me the pathway that they went? They left you behind, but they probably have a camp that they were at beforehand. Can you lead me to them? Vayomer, he says, I could, but you know, I can't risk my life for this. So he shavali velokim, swear to me by God, that you will not have me get killed. You will not have me being given over to my master. In other words, don't tell that I'm telling. Right? So he doesn't know who he's dealing with. You know, these guys could either be friends of Amalek. They could be enemies of Amalek. So the fact that these enemies of Amalek, if you're going to tell that I told, that's not going to be good for me. I'm going to get killed. And if they're friends of yours, still, you know, don't, you know, you shouldn't give me over back to my master. He was a cruel master. Either way, it's just like, you know, protect me. He wants protection. And if you do that, then I will take you down to where the camp is, and I'll show you where they are. So Tezayin, so it doesn't say David's response, but we assume the response was positive. Tezayin, Vayoridehu, so he led them on the path, and now they see the camp. Vinei netushim al pnei kol aretz, they're spread out over the ground. In other words, they're not in any kind of military position at all. And how do we know this? Because Ochlim Vishosim, they're eating and drinking, Vachogigim and partying, Vachola Shalola Godola Shalachom Eretz Plishim Eretz Yehuda, from all the loot, the great amount of loot that they took from the land of the Plishim and from the land of Yehuda. So they're partying. They're partying and there's no concerns. In other words, they don't fear, you know, they've just done a tremendous onslaught to all these people, to all these villages, whatever. They're not afraid. If you're already partying, you're not concerned about anything, so you're pretty confident nothing's going to happen. So now David realizes this is a perfect opportunity for me to attack them. So you see, being nice to this guy, he led them right to them. Yud Zayin, Vayakem David mehaneshef v'ad ha'erev l'moch rasam. So it's different pshatim, but the simple pshat is like this. So what did David do? He didn't attack them that day, because he had a very small amount of people, 600, 400 people. It was going up against a big, big army of Amalek. So he figured he'll wait for a time to surprise attack them. So he waited for the next day. Neshef means the pre-dawn hours. And then at that point, they're asleep. They're probably all drunk, sleeping off their party. So the best time to attack is like 4 o'clock in the morning when they're totally inebriated. So he attacked them from the early morning until the nighttime of the next day. Lo nimlat mehem ish, and not one man escaped, except, ki'im except, arba meos ish, also 400 people. It was a big group, but that's the only group that escaped. Why? Ishnar, they were young men, stronger men, more fleet-footed, and also Asher Rach Val Gmalim, and they rode away in camels, Vayinusu, and ran away. So because they were young and were on camels, they would run away. But aside from them, David wiped out the whole group. Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayatzel David es kol Asher Lachu Amalek. David saved everything that Amalek took. Veshtei Noshav Hitzil David, and David also saved his two wives. So first it's saying, in general, he saved everybody. He saved the women, the children, etc., etc. And then for his own particular needs, what he was mainly focused on for his own personal welfare was his two wives. And therefore it was two savings, the general saving for everybody, and then the saving for his two wives. Pasuk Yutes, Vlo nedar lohem min hakoton v'hagodol v'ad bonim u'bonos u'mishalol. So there wasn't missing anything from the older to the youngest, the boys, the girls, the loot, anything, everything that was taken from them, nothing was missing. The bodies, the wealth, everything, nothing was missing at all. Hakol heshiv David returned everything. Okay? And more than that, not only their family, their stuff, but even the other people, there were other cities that were attacked. Other Jewish cities, other Philistine cities, and they got it all back. Now I can't imagine they got it all because the guys did party a little bit. So, but the vast, almost nearly all, he was able to get back. Pasukhov. Okay. Vayikach David es kol hatzon vaboker, and also David was able to get all the sheep and cattle, and it seems that was owned by other groups that were marauded, and I guess cattle is a significant thing, so it gets its own pasuk. Nago lifnei amiknahu vayomer zeshal David, so they all led all the cattle, and they said, this is the loot of David. In other words, since he's the leader, he's like our king, so he's really entitled to all the loot. The extra stuff. Obviously, the stuff that belonged to the 600 men you know, that he would give back. But all the extra stuff is all David's. Yeah.
So the point is the sheep and the cow were, like, isn't he obligated to kill the livestock because it's Amalek?
No, it's not the Amalek livestock. It's from the other, let's say the Plishtim. The Amalekim destroyed the Plishtim and took their livestock.
So they would assume.
These are marauders. These marauders, they didn't have stuff with them. These are guys, you know, like Robin Hood and his merry men. They didn't have their own stuff. They're going from place to place. They rob and pillage and they take all this stuff. Yeah, they're not given to the poor, right. So it's not Amaleki stuff, but it's, you know, it's a lot of other stuff that belongs to a lot of other people. Chaf Aleph. So big success. So now they have to head back. So now, Chaf Aleph. Vayavo David el Masayim HaNashim Asher Pigru Milechas Echrei David. David came back to the 200 people who had weakened from going with them. Remember, they had been stationed behind. Yoshivum, and he returned to them, Benachal HaBesor, in that valley of Besor. Vayetsu Likras David, they came out to David, Likras HaAmasherito, and to the people with him. Vayigash David Es HaAm, and David came close to the people. Vayishalom Shom, and asked about their peace. Okay, so the Malbim explains that when David came to the people, it says he came with love. When Yigash usually means you're coming to show closeness. And he's saying he has no complaints. In other words, you might have thought he'd be upset you guys gave up on the chase. And he didn't. And since they had been weakened, he asked how they were doing. So David came back in a friendly way to them to see what their welfare is. So now the question becomes as follows. So now that we got all the stuff, who's entitled to all the loot? So in Pasuk of Beis, Vayan Kol Ish Ra Ubelial Me'anoshim Asher Ochlim David. So all the bad guys and the people without the yoke of heaven, in other words, the not menschlich people who were David. Remember, David had a very difficult group of guys who was under him. So the very negative guys were with David. Vayom they said, Yan Asher Lo Ochlo Imi. Since they didn't come with me, Lo Nitan Lahem Ashalol Asher Itzalnu. We're not going to give them the loot. Kim ish es ishto vespanov vayinagu v'yalechu. We'll give him back his wives and kids, and they can go and get out, because that's all they're entitled to. Okay, so it seemed that these guys saw that David didn't want to punish these guys. On the one hand, you say you should punish these guys. They were deserters. They didn't continue fighting with us, and they saw he was already being nice to them. So they said, no. Don't, you know, they're afraid he's going to share the loot with them. And they shouldn't get anything. Right? But if you recall, many moons ago, when we learned in Elul Metzius, if a lion comes along and attacks a person's flock of sheep and pulls a sheep out and is dragging it away, and then a random kind person goes and saves it, who gets the sheep? Zalacha is the guy who went and saved the sheep gets it, even though it belonged to the original owner. Why? Because once a lion pulls it away, the guy's miyayish. He gives up hope of ever getting it. Right? So he gave up hope. Just like if a tide sweeps it away. Now, if you want to be a nice guy, give it back, you can. But in halacha, the guy was miyayish. The guy despaired of ever giving it. He said, forget it. The tiger's got it. At that point, you lose your ownership. So anybody who wants to get it can get it. Okay, you want to be a nice guy, give it back. It's another thing. So the same thing over here. Once the Amalekis went and took it all, A, and B, you stopped running after it. So you don't deserve any of this stuff. Now, they can't take your, you know, wife and kids. We've got to give you back your wife and kids. When you talk about animals and wealth, that's your miyayishan. So they're saying, even from a halachic point of view, there's no reason to give anything back. Just give them back their family and let them go. So that's kind of big chutzpah. I mean, David should be the guy to make these decisions, and they're giving up their opinions. So David makes what we call a landmark decision that would be a decision that would now be be accepted as a law of Jewish warfare. Pasuk of Gimel. Vayomer David. David said, "Lo sasu chein achoy. Will not do this, my brothers." And he's going to answer, Malmo says he answers very cleverly and with a lot of righteousness. And you, as you'll see, but first of all, he calls them his brothers. No matter how chutzpahdik these guys are, he says, no, my brothers, we're not going to do that. And what he's going to say is the following. and he's going to use a very deep logic based on emunah in Hashem that will dictate this. Now, on the one hand, the guys who are complaining have a legitimate complaint. These guys didn't chase after. They didn't. Did it really help with the war effort? Didn't help with the war effort. So they don't deserve anything. But David looks at it from a spiritual perspective. When you look at war from a spiritual perspective, you come out to different conclusions. So let's just read the words of the rest of the pasuk, and then we'll need the Malbim to explain this pasuk and a half of what David does. He says, "Ace asher nasan Hashem lanu, that which Hashem gave to us, vayishmar asanu, and He protected us, vayiten es hagdud haba aleinu biyadenu, and Hashem gave this infantry into our hands." Chav Dalet. And who will listen to you, to these words that you are saying, that they shouldn't get? But the division will be equal between the group that goes down to battle and the group that goes down to watch our stuff. We divided it up equally. Seems when they were chasing after, you know, when you're chasing after, you have a lot of military equipment and, you know, you've got supplies. When they went to the plishtim originally, they went with some stuff. You know, going to battle, you know, in war there's this whole aspect, you know, the supply lines. Right? There's a whole second group that isn't in the battle at all, but they have to bring supplies. As you move further, you have to bring more supplies. You know, David, you know, at that time they didn't have supply lines. Everybody took everything they needed. And then you'd have to deal with what you got. So you have to have enough food, you have to have whatever. So when they were sent back, they took all their stuff back. They come to Ziklag, and it's all burned up. So they got to take all their stuff with them. They don't know how long it's going to be. So as they're chasing, David says, okay, you guys are tired. At least watch all our stuff. You'll be the supply line group. So David now enacts a law that even the guys who don't fight, but even if they're just watching our stuff, they deserve an equal distribution of the loot. What's the logic behind that? The Malbim elaborates greatly on this to explain this. So he says like this. He says, lo kein achi. On the words lo kein achi, the Malbim explains, he says, it's not so, my brothers. We didn't do anything. See, the guys who were upset, they said, listen, they didn't come with us to fight. We were the ones who fought. We were the ones who stuck our necks out on the line. So David says, you know, you should know, even though we fought, we didn't do anything. But rather it's what? It's Hashem was the one who fought at the battle and did everything. And in every aspect. On the words, Asher Nasan Hashem Lanu, Hashem gave to us, that's the very beginning. The very fact that we had stuff to begin with, it came from Hashem. And the fact that Hashem protected us, that when they took the loot, they didn't destroy it, and they didn't consume it all, and it was still around, that came from Hashem. And that the fact that He gave them, we attacked them and defeated them and put them in our hands, that also came from Hashem. So if our originally getting it came from Hashem, and the fact that they weren't destroyed came from Hashem, and the fact we were able to defeat them came from Hashem, so what did we do? But rather, it's the merit. You know, we have merits and righteousness, and Hashem sent us and gave them into our hands. So now, think about it. If we really don't do anything, so now David turns around and says, really, the logic should be the opposite. He says, the Malbim explains at least, he says, the guys who didn't go, they deserve more than the guys who fought in battle. That's what the Malbim says. He says, those who stood by the supply lines and didn't chase after, they must have had a big bitachon in Hashem's salvation, that Hashem would help us even without them chasing. So in other words, he contends, I mean, you could argue on this point, but the Malbim says the guys who don't go should more bitachon. Why? Because we were fighting. We're going to make it happen. The guys who aren't doing anything, so if they're not doing anything, and the davening to Hashem, they're showing more bitachon. Now that's a difficult shot to say, because the text seems to say the reason they didn't chase is because they were too tired. It doesn't seem from the pasuk that David said to them, listen guys, we don't need all you guys to chase. I know it's going to be hard on you guys, but please stay behind and watch the stuff. That's not what happened. So it's a little difficult what he's saying, that they had greater bitachon, but that's what he maintains. He says really they have a greater merit that they stayed behind and davened. Okay. I don't know, you could argue on that point. Clearly, you know, nowadays, this is a big debate, as well. People complain about the boys in Eretz Yisrael who study Torah and don't go to battle. They say, what do they do to help us? And they don't realize you need the schus of Torah as well to help. So
these guys weren't learning Torah either, right?
Right. I'm just saying that if the people who don't fight in battle do things to show you that they are helpful and they're having bitachon, that's also an important thing. You need people with bitachon. You need people who are helping out. So some help by watching the utensils, others help by learning Torah, etc., etc. But what clearly David says is that they're entitled to this portion. And he's saying, if anything, they should get more. No, but I will decide. Everyone gets the same. Everyone gets the same. Even though there's some people who do more, there's some who do less. As long as they're not, you know, doing the opposite, they're not negative, so they deserve as well. And this became a big landmark decision, that we divide everything up equally. Listen, they ran out. It wasn't that they were bad guys. They were just too tired. They couldn't go on anymore. Okay, what can you do? Okay, so you stay behind and watch the stuff. They're no less important than the guys who go and fight the battle. Well, how can you decide? You decide because Hashem fights the war anyway. So really don't do anything anyway. Let's not get carried away with ourselves. What did we do more than the other guys? You know, you can go to war, Hashem can wipe you out. As you'll see in the next parak, it's going to happen to Shaul. They go to police and they get wiped out. Well, it's all decided by Hashem on our merits. So if we were able to get them back, that means we all had the merits. The guys who fought, the guys who were in the supply lines. So it gets divided up equally. And that becomes the rule that they make, and we'll find in the next pasuk of Hey. Vayihi mayom ahu v'mala was from that day onwards. Vayesimel lechok ulamishpat liyisrael. He made it as a statute and a law for the Jewish people. Ada yom hazeh, until today, that's the way the Jewish people divide things. The Mama has a lot to talk about in this pasuk, and tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, when we come back, we will elaborate on what this chok and this mishpat is, and we'll continue finishing with that paragraph and start the last paragraph.